I'm your host, Jenny Worthington, and I will be introducing you to people and organizations around the world who are working for animal welfare. We're being called to participate in making the world a better place, and the people I will be talking with are on the front lines of critical work that we need to know about so that we can support them. I hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. Welcome to Hello Animal Talks. I'm your host, Jenny Worthington, and today I have the pleasure of talking to Jude Langmead, Vice President of St. Francis Farm Sanctuary, an organization that rescues dogs and cats from kill shelters who are in danger of being euthanized. As director of their adoption program, Jude tells us how a small organization can make a big difference.
Hi, Jude. Welcome to Hello Animal Talks.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to see you.
It's nice to see you as well.
Yeah. We are getting together to talk about the St. Francis Farm Sanctuary. And you all are located in Carlisle, South Carolina. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to hear about how you got involved with, well, first of all, let's talk about what the Farm Sanctuary is.
So we started the rescue in 2008. And we always made a commitment that we would always be there for the animals that we rescued. So we made a lifetime commitment to them. And so what that means is that regardless the reason, we will take the animal back. So in doing that, it isn't a small task. And there are certainly animals that will come back to you that you determine aren't really ideal fits for a typical home environment. But they deserve a place to live. So that's where St. Francis Farm was born. In 2013, we found the farm. It's 50 acres. It was an old farmhouse. It's not in great order, but it provided us the space and a structure that we could work with. So since then, we have added animals that have come up through our adoption program and maybe been returned to us with a behavioral challenge or a medical need. And if we aren't able to place them in another home, then they might go and live at the sanctuary for the rest of their lives. There are other times that we'll take on dogs or cats if, you know, in some cases there are feral animals that end up in the local shelter and they don't really have a lot of opportunity for rescue. So we will offer them an opportunity to live at the farm. And so in terms of the farm, we work really hard to find play groups for the dogs so that they have enrichment and they're able to enjoy life. And, you know, for each of them, it's a little bit different depending on what their needs are. So for the ferals, the ability just to run around and make friends with other animals if they choose to and feel like they're in a secure space, that's all that they need. And, you know, in other cases, we've had animals that have come to us because their owners passed away, they're older, they may, you know, be at the end state of their life. And so we provide hospice care for them. So that's basically how St. Francis came to be, was meeting the need that we had to fulfill our commitment.
Did you start just because you saw a need that people were adopting animals and then not wanting to keep them? Or did you start rescuing animals like off the street and then it evolved into the adoption?
So basically it started with the founder, Whitney Knowlton. She's a friend of mine. I actually babysat for her when she was younger. We're probably 8 years apart. And so she actually grew up in South Carolina, in Hilton Head. And, you know, that's a humane society where there aren't animals at risk. But then she started looking at a website called Dogs in Danger. And that site actually showed her animals in her state that were facing euthanasia. And so that was what really was the impetus for her to start to rescue. It was small in the beginning, just her personally driving down, grabbing a few dogs and a few cats and driving them back home to the Hamptons and collaborating with Southampton Town Shelter to try and get them adopted. But what we realized was there was a huge need. Yeah. So that's really what it came down to, was that we knew at that time there were 10,000 healthy, adoptable animals on a daily basis that were being euthanized in our shelters. And so that's what really pushed us to start the rescue and collaborate with local shelters to get the animals, you know, out of harm's way and work on finding them homes. And so that's where we started the adoption program.
Is that 10,000 just in, is that in the whole country or in the...
So in the whole country, at the time we started our rescue, on an annual basis, 2.7 million animals would be killed in the shelters. And that averaged about 10,000 a day. You know, you begin to ask the question, why are these animals being euthanized? And you realize that in a lot of cases, they're healthy and they are adoptable. They don't have behavioral, you know, requirements or any issues. They're just not getting exposure. So if you think back to 2008, that was, you know, a little before Facebook would really have a presence. And once Facebook came into play, that gave us the opportunity to work with shelters to create visibility for the animals that were in their care, because as one rescue, we can't save them all. So we formed a collaboration called Middle Mutts, and that was in 2010. And basically what that was a shelter to rescue program. So we would work with volunteers in the shelter, get the photos and information about the pets that were there, and then we would post them to our Facebook page and attract other rescues that we had vetted through an approval process to take the animals. So, you know, that way we could rescue more animals than we could if it was just up to us and just the ones that we were bringing to our rescue.
So basically you all are a no-kill shelter.
We're a no-kill animal rescue. Animal. And so when we started our adoption program, we made a commitment that we would rescue, you know, that once we place an animal, we were committed to them for life. And so that by virtue of that, we are no kill. It's a challenge to maintain that commitment. Yeah. There's a lot of financial obligation that comes with it. But to truly be a no kill facility, then you have to be committed to take the animals back.
It's dogs and cats. Is that all you do?
Yes, dogs and cats.
Okay, great. And how many animals do you guys have now?
So currently at the sanctuary, we have about 120 animals that are in residence. And then in our foster homes, which is where animals that are in our adoption program reside, I would say that we currently have about 40 animals between our cats and dogs that are in foster homes that are available for adoption.
Do people adopt from all over the place or just within South Carolina?
Well, actually, we end up transporting the animals up to New York for adoption. So they're primarily adopted in the Long Island area. That's mostly would be in New York that we would be adopting out. We do some local adoptions in the South Carolina area, but most of the dogs travel up the East Coast to New York and are fostered in Long Island and then adopted locally. We do occasionally do out-of-state adoptions as, you know, as the opportunity arises.
Why Long Island?
So when Whitney started the rescue, she was actually living in Southampton. That was where it started. And so, you know, initially you're looking for fosters, you turn to your neighbors. So we had a lot of fosters in that immediate area. And over time, as our volunteer base and our adoption base has grown, we've moved a little further up island. So we're generally working in the Patchogue area, Port Jeff, that area. But that was the reason that we started in Long Island.
The dogs that you're getting from these that are in danger of being euthanized in other shelters, are they coming from all over the place, all over the country?
No, they generally are coming from South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia.
And you find out about them just by calling around to different shelters and finding...
So most of the shelters now, you know, with social media, it's, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Facebook, but I love it for what it's done for the animals in terms of exposure. Mm-hmm. So most of the shelters have volunteer groups, and those volunteer groups present the dogs on Facebook. And then we look at them and we'll comment or reach out to the contact at the shelter to inquire about information on the dog. And then if we feel it's a good fit for the adoption program, we'll make a commitment to the animal.
And so if somebody takes an animal, they adopt it, and for whatever reason it doesn't work out, they can bring it back to you.
Right.
And do you all have trainers and people that work with them if they have some kind of a behavioral issue?
We do. So, you know, the first step, if someone's taken, you know, we start by preparing the animals to succeed. Part of that is just making sure that people understand that, you know, change is stressful and adjusting to a new environment is stressful. So we give people tips and tricks for helping the animals acclimate. And, you know, it's in a lot of cases, it's time and patience that's needed. But in some cases, you may have a situation where one pet doesn't get along with a resident pet, or there's behavior that starts to occur. And with that, you know, we reach out to provide assistance based on our knowledge. And then we have trainers that we partner with to do assessments of the dogs to try to determine, you know, what is actually needed in this case in terms of an intervention. In some cases, you know, the feeling is that this dog really needs essentially a board and train and rehabilitation. Uh-huh. So we have a trainer that we work with in Wisconsin who will provide that. And then she actually places the dog through her adoption agency once it's been rehabilitated.
So how do you transport these animals?
Oh, it's a wing and a prayer. So predominantly we use ground transport. It's various transport companies that we work with. And I will say that it has become increasingly more challenging to find transporters. Gas costs are going up. Maintenance costs have gone up. And the reality is that, I mean, we had one transporter that told us they couldn't continue because they would simply make more money if they were renting out their vehicle to Amazon. That's disappointing, but understandable. So most of it's ground transport, and we generally run a transport once a week. I think because of the challenges, we'll probably go to twice a month, but larger transports. We do sometimes, you know, there's volunteer transports, but most of the time it's paid. And, but there's a great organization called Pilots and Paws, and we do use them as needed, but that's a group of pilots that donate their time, their planes, the cost of travel, and they fly the animals for the rescues. And they don't charge us anything for it. So, you know, if we have a dog that has the opportunity to go up to, let's say, New Hampshire or Vermont or somewhere where there's wide open space, from Long Island to there by car, it'd be a number of legs or one long drive. Mm-hmm. So we'll put it up as a post. And then if there's a pilot available, they'll reach out to us and they'll fly the dog up.
Great. Okay. So the animals you have in South Carolina are really the residential animals that cannot be adopted.
For the most part, there are a few that are there that we see that, you know, that we feel like they could be adopted. So it's really about finding them the right home. So we'll look, I think, to adopt them out locally so that, you know, they stay close to the farm. And then that way, if there's a problem or a concern, you know, there's a place for them to reach out, get the support they need, or if need be, bring the animal back to us.
Right. And so do you all have a lot of employees, or is it all volunteers?
No, I mean, at the farm, we do have staff. Mm. It varies, but we probably have somewhere between 6 and 8 workers.
Okay.
And, you know, they're primarily responsible for the day-to-day care of those animals that are in residence or, you know, are at the farm temporarily before they transport up to us.
Yeah.
The rest of our work is all done voluntarily.
So do you all offer vet services as well then, if you are taking in animals that have healthcare issues?
We don't offer healthcare services, but we do have a number of veterinarians that work with us and offer us discounted rates for their services. So they, you know, there's definitely, we wouldn't be able to do this without a couple of our vet partners who are just incredibly generous with their time and, you know, really help to manage our expenses.
Yeah. Do you have like a spay and neuter kind of, what do you call it?
A low cost spay neuter. We don't offer those services, but all of the animals that we adopt out are spayed or neutered prior to adoption.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was
Most of the time, because the cost of vetting in South Carolina or North Carolina or Georgia is more affordable than it's going to be in New York, we tend to do all of the vetting or as much as we can before the animals come up to New York.
Do you do any rescuing off the street, or it's just through the shelters?
No, we definitely do what I call community outreach. You know, some examples can be just as simple as, you know, you go for a drive around the farm and sadly you're going to see some stray animals, and you may stop and, you know, offer assistance or try to catch them if they're truly stray. So we come by them that way. Just, you know, the area around the farm is pretty impoverished. People will sometimes just turn their animals out. We've had people bring animals to the farm. They found them and they knew that we exist, so they brought them to us. It varies, but whenever we have a situation where someone's in the community and is asking for help to avoid their animal going into the shelter, we always want to make ourselves available.
Well, it sounds like a lot of work. I think that's fantastic, though. I mean, it's such a huge issue.
It is. It's, you know, for that, when we look at that number, I think I often remind people, if you were to look at the numbers only, you probably wouldn't do this work, because you feel like you're just a drop in the ocean.
Right.
But when you look at the bigger picture, since we started, I told you when we were starting, it was 2.7 million animals a year. That number is down to 1.3 million. And that daily number is half what it was before. On the bigger scale, we are making progress. But I think as a rescuer, you always just pray for the day that they put you out of business.
Absolutely. Well, that's a huge difference.
It's huge. And a lot of that is education. A lot of people, myself included, I didn't know about the issues. And then once you know, you can't unknow. And then Nathan Winograd is the founder of the no-kill movement. And he has a demonstrated equation. I think it's now 11 steps. But there are shelters, whether in rural areas or urban areas, that have implemented these techniques and successfully become no-kill. It's really about recognizing that there are a lot of adopters on an annual basis. And if you can get people to adopt from the shelter, potentially you can adopt your way out of the problem.
It's incredible. But, you know, the whole thing about it being feeling like it's just a drop in the bucket, I mean, that's the whole point of what I'm doing, is that these I'm talking to people that are doing facing daunting issues, but work they're doing is making a difference just because they're doing it, you know, and it's pretty incredible what drop in the bucket can do.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, even with our donations, our average donation is $30. It's amazing to me how much money can be raised with small amounts being donated by large numbers of people.
Right. And is that the main funding you have is through donations?
Yes. Yeah. So our revenue comes from our adoption fees and the donations that we receive. We get small grants here and there, but we don't have any guaranteed funding or, you know, guaranteed grants or anything that we receive on an annual basis.
Why do you think there's so many adoptable animals in these shelters?
Honestly, you know, it's hard to understand why. I think, you know, very often people come to the situation with a dog that they find in the shelter and they immediately want to ask the question, what's wrong with the dog? Hmm. Why are they here?
Yeah.
And you start to realize the more that you do the work that very often this is not the failing of the animal, but in some way they've been let down by people.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm a big believer you find an excuse or you find a way. I think that there are people that, you know, I think it's a mentality that considers the animal to be property versus being part of your family. And as property, you can do with it as you wish. Mm-hmm. And so whether it be to drop it at the shelter or take matters into your own hands, people feel entitled to do that. I think what has changed is that while the numbers are still pretty significant in terms of those animals in the shelters, and it seems to grow every day, you have a lot more people considering rescue as a solution for their need if they're looking to adopt a dog or a cat. That's the sum total of, you know, people putting their mouths, you know, opening their mouths and really creating awareness.
Yeah.
I think even at the, what was it, at the Grammy Awards? No, I think it was at the Oscars that Jamie Lee Curtis brought an adoptable dog to the event to speak to the importance of rescue. And the dog was subsequently adopted from that show.
Wow.
But, you know, there is a lot of ways that people have created audience. So, like, there's the Puppy Bowl every year, and all of the puppies in that are rescues that are available for adoption. And we know a guy, William Bertoloni. He is known for training lots of dogs that appear in Broadway shows, Annie and all these other shows. And he sources his dogs from rescues. I think it's people kind of getting away from the thought that a purebred is somehow better than.
Mm-hmm. I think a big part of people's hesitation with adoptions is, what's the history of the dog? What is the trauma, you know, that the dog's gone through? Why is the dog there? You know, what's
right.
wrong with the dog? And what is the ratio of dogs to cats that you have? Do you have a lot of cats as well as dogs?
We do, actually. I will say our cat team has done an incredible job of growing our adoption program. And I think, you know, the first couple of years we had maybe a handful of cats that we were able to help. And then the numbers started to grow and increase, and we got to 200 and so on. And actually last year, the number was about equal of cats to dogs that we placed and rescued.
Wow.
So over 500 cats, over 500 dogs.
That's incredible. Really
yeah.
incredible.
Because the cats are always the ones that get forgotten. It's interesting because people oftentimes bring up the cost of adopting a rescue. And, you know, when you look into our costs to get the dog to you, fully vetted, people understand it. But the reality is, when you're rescuing cats, it's very difficult to break even, let alone not be in a situation where you're paying to rescue the cat, because, you know, you're really not going to get much more than, you know, $100 or $125 for a cat. And yet their vetting isn't significantly less expensive, and the cost of the transport for them isn't less expensive.
Yeah. And if you raise the cost on it, people wouldn't adopt them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, when kitten season happens, everybody and anyone is posting about some litter of kittens they found in their backyard. And,
oh, true.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think it depends on what your priority is. But, you know, if you're getting the cat from our rescue, then it's been tested for feline leukemia, feline AIDS and that sort of thing, you know, so there is a lot that goes into the vetting that makes it a different equation, but not everybody can appreciate it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. I'm trying to imagine how the facility looks with all of these animals. Since it's a farm, is it barns? And
yeah. So we have some outdoor sheds and the animals are housed in there. We have some outbuildings, and then, you know, they're kenneled with coverage during the summer, and then we have, you know, misting and fans to keep them cool. The rule of thumb is if the weather calls for it, they come inside. You know, we do have the farmhouse. We have an addition to the farmhouse. So one way or another, the animals are accommodated, but it, you know, it looks like a big farmhouse with a lot of play fields and outbuildings.
And when you say, like, you set up play groups and stuff, that's within the group of animals that you have at the farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we look for, you know, who gets along well enough.
Right.
And we put them together. And so how do you keep all of these animals from getting into arguments on the regular?
Yeah.
You have to rotate them, and you have to put them with those that they get along with. So some of the play groups are larger than others, you know, some really don't play well with others. But it's really nice because it creates a little bit of a social outlet for the dogs. And they have their friends, and, you know, it helps too, because sometimes they come to us, and we had one situation where we had a bonded pair that's their residence, and one of the pair passed away. You know, they're definitely mourning, but they found friendship with another animal.
Oh, good.
So we could learn a lot from animals, that's for sure.
I know. And I just am hoping that a lot of these animal videos that are on now, part of the technology of people being able to share videos, makes people think about them differently and appreciate them more.
I think so, for sure. I mean, I think there are certainly people that their entire need for the internet is the cat videos, the dog videos, the entertainment.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there are websites like Dodo and others that, you know, really show us the happily ever after stories and the things that remind you of, you know, the good that's going on and that you can take a dog. I mean, we see a lot more now of police officers and other groups using rescue dogs and training rescue dogs versus, you know, getting a Malinois and training the purebred.
Right.
So I don't think that would happen if it weren't for dogs being shown in a different light.
Do you all don't do any, get involved in any emergency operations, like if hurricanes come through or something like that? Do you get involved in those kind of things?
We have. We went in, when we went to Houston during Matthew. Mm-hmm. It's tough to get involved in that because, you know, Houston already has a huge challenge. They have, or at one point it was estimated they had 1 million stray animals.
Oh,
so when something like Matthew hit, you have a shelter that's already full and it's got primarily pit bulls in it, and many of them are heartworm positive. There is no room for the lost animal that's been separated from their family to come. So that's where we stepped in. We took those dogs, but you know, for us to absorb those dogs, it's a huge challenge.
Yeah.
It's nothing minor. And it's always very difficult. It always seems like to get the funding, you have to ask in advance. And obviously, if it's an emergency, you don't really have a lot of advance notice.
Right.
So, but we do try to help where we can to alleviate the pressures for whatever reason.
And do you have actual shelters calling you guys? Like if they, some of these shelters where the dogs and the cats are going to be euthanized, do they ever call you guys?
Always.
They look
They're always in touch with us and letting us know. I mean, I will tell you right now, there isn't a shelter I can think of that isn't over capacity. So everybody's calling, everybody's asking. They'll ask you about the same dog that you may have said, I can't take that dog, but they'll ask again. And, you know, you have to appreciate those advocates. But they very definitely reach out. And that's where some of the organizations who have been able to build a larger space, get a good process in place, achieve no kill, they can really step in and help. And then we are kind of the trickle down from there.
Right.
So one of our shelter partners was addressing a hoarding situation where they took in 180 dogs.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought, you know, oh my gosh, I don't know how we can help. But what you realized is they were kind of the triage. They have veterinarians on staff, so they were able to triage the animals and actually get them out to rescues pretty efficiently. So not a lot of them went into their shelter.
It's a huge job you guys are doing. It's really amazing.
Well, it's definitely a labor of love.
Yeah, it really is.
That's for sure. And it's challenging work. I always say that. It's not made for every, you know, not everyone's made for it. If it was easy, everybody would do it. We've seen a lot of new rescues come into play, and we welcome that. There is so much room for rescues. I think the challenge is that, you know, not every rescue is the same.
Yeah.
So when you uphold the commitment like we do, it's important that people appreciate that because there is such a financial burden that comes with it. But I will say it's my favorite team sport, and there is no individual who's ever rescued a dog or a cat. It is a team effort, always.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is funded by donors who, what they do is they'll make a pledge. So there's a dog that's sitting in a shelter. They're coming up on their last day. So people will make pledges to say if a qualified rescue steps up for this dog, I will donate whatever amount. Wow. And so that is great for the shelters because now they can come to the rescue and say, okay, this dog is running out of time. Yes, it's heartworm positive, and that's going to cost you several hundred dollars to treat, but we have several hundred dollars in pledges.
Right.
That's the biggest thing is allowing the people who are at home, who are looking at this, to have an outlet where they can feel like they are really making a difference. And so, you know, an example of that is we just did a pull from a shelter in Georgia, and we took a group of dogs, and people pledged over $1,000 for the dogs, for their care, for their transport and all of it. And it was just amazing just to see the photo, the difference between them in the shelter and them all playing as soon as they got out.
So amazing.
And, you know, being able to share that with the donor and then subsequently the adoption photo. If you are at home and you can't physically foster, you're not able to get more involved, but you can afford to donate, you can truly make a difference.
Yeah. That's so great. I mean, it's so creative, the ways you guys come up with to help get this done. It's just really amazing.
Well, you know, I have to say, I can't take a lot of credit because everything that I believe, you know, or everything I've come to know through this process, much of it I learned from Whitney, who founded the rescue. One thing she always said to me is, if you do the right thing, somehow it works out.
I believe that too, yeah.
And that has really been our, you know, kind of what we've kept to.
Right.
And so when we've taken on extraordinary challenges, we never feel like we're doing it alone because we know we have a lot of supporters. And we engage them in the process to say, we really want to step up here. We want to rescue these dogs. To do that, we're going to need foster homes. We're going to need funding. You know, are you in on this mission with us?
Right.
And it's really making them feel a part of it. Because for a really long time, we kind of kept the truth hidden. You know, we weren't as open about the situation at the shelters. We kind of sanitized what we were presenting to people. And it was only after we lost dogs that had been euthanized that I think we realized if you don't ask for help, then it's really easy for someone to say, I would have. I wish I'd known. I could have.
Right.
So now we ask for help. And if we're not able to help, then at least, you know, we tried. And we all share in the sorrow if we're not able to help. But more often than not, I can say as a credit to our supporters, we are able to do the things that we set out to do. But I remember in the first 3 years, I think we had placed 1,800 dogs. I was at a no-kill conference and someone asked how many staff members we had. And at that point, it was 3 volunteers, myself, Whitney, and another woman. They said, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And I thought to myself, if you'd ever said to us at the beginning of that, you guys are going to rescue 1,800 animals and place them in adoptive homes in the next 3 years, we would have said, oh my gosh, we can't do that. But somehow by not limiting ourselves, we've been able to do things we would have never imagined.
Step by step.
Yeah. It's just, you know, and recognizing too that there's a lot that comes with it. You can definitely get some compassion fatigue.
Yeah.
So, you know, being there for each other, I know myself this past year, I had to step back for a little bit because I was feeling overwhelmed. And, you know, it's just like anything. If, you know, you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself first.
Right.
So, but, you know, I appreciate everybody who supported me in taking the time away so I could come back restored.
Right. Well, listen, you've been so great taking this time. I'm going to let you go, but I want you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, Jenny.
Absolutely. So just so people can hear it out loud, tell us how they can go about helping with donations.
Absolutely.
All that kind of stuff.
So the best place to go is our website, which is www.lcarescue.org. And there we have links to donate. And there's also a link to St. Francis Farm from there. and you can click on the sponsor link if you'd like to sponsor one of the residents. In addition, we have a really active Facebook page as Last Chance Animal Rescue. So it's just LCA Rescue is, you know, the Facebook account number or name. So yeah, I would say those. And then also we have Instagram. So I would encourage anybody who wants to get involved to support us to, and, you know, get signed up so that you're looking at Facebook and Instagram, follow us on them, and definitely check out our website, because that's where you get all of the updates, the best part, seeing them happily ever after.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things, actually, in the videos you see on the internet, is the difference in the animals after. They'll show like a before they're adopted, just like you were saying.
Yeah.
And then after, and they just, the expressions on their faces, there's no way you can say that animals aren't aware and intelligent and sentient.
Oh, they absolutely are sentient beings. And, you know, I can tell you, I have a photograph that just came up on my memories. It was from like 9 years ago. And we literally had moments before the animal's time was up. And a woman who knew very little about this dog, but knew that they were at risk, drove down as quickly as she could and pulled into the parking lot with just moments to spare.
Wow.
And she took that dog home. And like I said, she didn't know much about the dog, but she thought, you know what? I've got a bathroom and that'll be where this dog will stay tonight. And I have this picture of this dog and they are just head to head. And the gratitude that this dog is showing in the photo, it's just, it still sits with me.
Yeah.
Because it just reminds you that, you know, never, never minimize your own power.
Right.
You can save a life. You just have to step up.
Oh, it's amazing. It's really amazing. Well, thank you so much for the work.
Thank you.
I just can't thank you enough.
My pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, I just really appreciate it. And I know people are going to love to hear about what you guys are doing. And yeah, thank you for all that work. It's amazing.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time and helping us to get a little more exposure and let more people know about us.
Absolutely. Well, it was great meeting you, Jude. And I'll keep us posted on what's going on. And feel free to call me if you ever need anything to go out on the airwaves.
I sure appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good rest of the day.
You too. Take care. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hello Animal Talks, hosted by me, Jenny Worthington, production by Stacy Spencer of Going Graphic, sound engineered by Jimmy Richards of Bay Central Media, and music written and performed by Jake Shepard.